And when the living entity is arrested, all his followers, namely the life air, the senses, and sense objects, immediately leave the lump of matter, the body. When the living entity and his companions leave, the body no longer works, but turns into basic material elements: earth, water, fire, air, and ether. When a city attacked by enemies is vacated by its inhabitants, the enemy immediately takes advantage of that city and bombards it to smash the whole thing to dust. When we say, quote, dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return, end quote, we refer to the body. When a city is attacked and bombarded by enemies, the citizens generally leave, and the city ceases to exist. It is a foolish person who engages in improving the condition of a city without caring for the citizens or inhabitants. Similarly, a living entity who is not properly enlightened in spiritual knowledge simply takes care of the external body, not knowing that the spirit soul is the principal factor within the body. When one is advanced in spiritual knowledge, the spirit soul is saved from eternal transmigration. The Bhagavatam considers those who are attached to their bodies to be like cows and asses, sa eva go kara. The cow is a very innocent animal, and the ass is a beast of burden. One who labors under the bodily conception simply works like an ass and does not know his self-interest. It is therefore said, yasyatma buddhi kunape tridatuke swadhi kalatrad ishubhama ijadi yatirta buddhi shalilena karhichij janeshva bigyeshu sa eva gokara. Quote, a human being who identifies this body made of three elements with his self, who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kinsmen, who considers the land of birth worshipable, and who goes to a place of pilgrimage simply to take a bath, rather than to meet men of transcendental knowledge there, is to be considered like an ass or a cow. Bhagavatam 10:84-13. Human civilization, devoid of Krishna consciousness, is simply a civilization of lower animals. Sometimes such a civilization may study the dead body and consider the brain or the heart. However, no part of the body is important unless the spirit soul is present. In a modern civilization of cows and asses, scientists try to search out some value in the brain or heart of a dead man. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Om Gyana Tamarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamiham Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhya eva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivas Adigora Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Read the verse quickly again. Purim vihayo pagata uparudho bunjanga maha yadatam evanupuri vishirna prakritim gata. Translation: the serpent, who had already been arrested by the soldiers of Yavana Raja and was out of the city, began to follow his master along with the others. As soon as they all left the city, it was immediately dismantled and smashed to dust. We're continuing to hear about King Puranjana, or the living entity, being dragged from the gross body at the time of death. And we're hearing the specifics of the different components of the subtle body leaving the gross body. And Srila Prabhupada is discussing various topics in relation to that fact of the matter. So, first here, he is expressing that when everybody leaves the body of the city, figurative city, or all the components of the subtle body along with the soul leave the gross body, then the gross body has no, capacity to continue its configuration. The gross body itself is, as Srila Prabhupada expresses many times, is just dead matter. Actually, a body is never living. There's no such thing as a living body. The living entity is within the body, so the body seems to be living because the living being is there. But the body itself is always dead. It's inert matter that's being animated by the presence of the soul. So he's going to discuss this point later, that to study a dead body is actually useless because there's no value in something that can't produce life or that can't sustain itself. Rather, we should be looking for the thing which is actually bringing the life to the body. So, but that's at the last paragraph, he's talking about that. So continuing, he makes the analogy that when a city is attacked by enemies and the citizens leave the city, then once everybody's out of that city, the city ceases to exist. Historically, that's obviously happened so many times. The city was abandoned and it goes to nothing. Or a ghost town, the Western United States used to have all these ghost towns because some band of persons attacked their city and they had to flee, and here's a town that has all these buildings and streets and tumbleweeds or whatever, some imagery is there. But there's no value. What's the value of a lot of buildings and streets and whatever may have been there without the people to utilize it? There's no value. And it also degrades over time because no one is maintaining it. So the same thing with the body. Once the soul leaves with his attendants, these subtle aspects of the body, then there is no use for the body any longer. There's nothing maintaining the body, and the body deteriorates. In other words, it becomes obvious when we consider this, by the explanation that's given so many times by Srila Prabhupada, that if you look at what the body actually is objectively, when the person is gone, the body can't keep working. All the components that you could see previously are there. It's not like a piece was taken out, of a gross form and then it stops working, like you took the key out of the ignition or something like that. The body is still there. All the chemicals are still there. The gross form of the body is still there. But something is missing. So we understand that the subtle body is what's missing. The mind and the intelligence and the ego that was driving that body are not there anymore. So what to speak of understanding that the spirit soul is the important factor within the body. Modern science doesn't even understand the importance of the subtle body in relation to the gross body. Really doesn't consider that so much. Srila Prabhupada is saying that a foolish person or so-called scientific civilization simply takes care of the external body, not knowing that the spirit soul is the principal factor within the body. When one is actually advanced in spiritual knowledge or knowledge in general, the soul is saved from eternal transmigration. So the lower animal consciousness that Srila Prabhupada goes on to describe here, with quoting the Srimad Bhagavatam, is that we're just interested in understanding how the gross body works. We're mostly interested in studying things like the brain and the heart to see how it functions. And in the bigger, grander picture of things, this is like ABC, very like preschool understanding of what a living being really is. Even if you just look at the material components, you know, the soul is a totally different thing. The soul is beyond the capacity for measuring and experimenting with instruments. But the subtle body, which is actually also the thing that is driving the gross body at the, you know, for the facility of the soul to try to enjoy, is also not even understood. So modern civilization is just like tinker toys, like playing with these little things, the heart and the brain, and like, you know, trying to understand the nervous system, and like there's a whole understanding of how this functions that's very simply put by Srila Prabhupada here, that you have to feed the person inside the body and everything else will work nicely. Or, you know, material well-being comes when there's spiritual well-being. That whole system is already there. Like in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, if you just do sacrifice, if you just participate in your relationship with Krishna, then everything that's required for the bodily situation automatically comes. So that science being ignored, scientists are going through this little tinker toy program of trying to pick apart all the parts of the body and understand how everything is working nicely so that they can try to keep it working, you know, for a longer period of time. Like, I remember before Krishna consciousness, I was interested in the idea of nanotechnology. I had this drive that I was like, I want to do something to help people, aka increase the capacity for length and breadth of sense enjoyment. So the nanotechnology thing is like you create these little machines that can go inside the body and they can fix like problems that are there, right? So that you can continue living for longer and longer and longer. Because there's all these little things happening that, you know, are gradually deteriorating the organs and the brain and all these things. So if you can create nanotechnology that can, like, I don't know, robots that can swim in your blood or something, you know, then they can go and they can fix the cells, or they can hunt down like cancer cells, and you know, you have like this whole army inside your body that's protecting you from everything. That's like that's the idea that's out there. That was a long time ago, actually. Now I don't know what they're doing. Stem cell research or something, whatever, blah blah blah. So there's this concept that if I fix the gross body, then everything is going to continue going. It's such an elementary concept in terms of the grand knowledge that we are receiving. They're not even understanding how to deal with the subtle body, what to speak of the soul. They're just dealing with somehow keep these gross components together, and that's going to make the whole thing work. It's like out in left field in terms of what we understand, what makes the body go. Ultimately, of course, it's the super soul giving intelligence and providing all the necessities of life. But considering that the living being is just the body, not even having a clear understanding of the other subtler, finer elements of what makes things work, human civilization is considered to be now just lower animals trying to, in other words, as Srila Prabhupada says so many times, you can eat in a fancier way, you can sleep in a fancier way, you can defend in a fancier way, you can try to heal your body in a fancier way, but it's all the same thing, whether it's millions of dollars of research or it's a dog licking his wound, it's the same program. So there's nothing glorious about it, you know, despite the fact that tens of thousands of people probably today and tomorrow are going to be protesting that we want more money for health care and like blah blah blah. When they can just go to receive spiritual knowledge and they'll get more than that. So anyway, those are some thoughts of the class. We want to end on time today. So anybody have any comments or questions on this section of the chapter or this verse purport? We can take our time. Yes, Dr. Richard. Is there a microphone so that the video thing can... It's like Dr. Luke knows what's happening. Okay.
Hare Krishna. In the Isopanishad, Srila Prabhupada talks about vidya, and then there's a third one. I think it's aparavidya. Or
okay.
Do you know the?
Aparavidya and apar.
So, and I think that that's this, that the understanding of how to work with the material energy. So I was just thinking right now that, okay, material wellness follows strong spiritual wellness. But that's, that conception of what material wellness is has to be completely a blank slate in order to accept that, right? Because it's not...
In other words, it's not like if you practice Krishna consciousness, then you have no...
That you have a healthy body.
No
or,
material problems.
Yeah.
Or we can live like eternally if we just keep chanting Hare Krishna or like that. Because obviously that's not going to happen. But, I mean, there's so many ways to express that. One thing Srila Prabhupada would point out a lot is that the devotees are not getting, you know, diseases like other people are getting. They are bright-faced and, you know... happy and healthy, and he would make these, he would express these things as a part of his campaign to, you know, convince persons of the value of spiritual life. So, of course, then there's like the individual level of things. Why is it not happening, you know, for me, maybe, or something like that. And one thing is obviously that the body is temporary, so it's going to go at some point, whether we're Krishna conscious or not. So that's an obvious one. And another thing is that if we're practicing Krishna consciousness, then our interest isn't so much that the body is taken care of, rather that whatever Krishna wants to do with the body, then he does that thing. So there are persons who, you know, get a lot of physical and even psychological benefit from how much they're willing to put into spiritual life. But greater level of surrender, as is described in fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, is one is not really interested, concerned to see that the needs of the body are met in and of itself. Rather, one is simply interested in serving Krishna, and Krishna takes care of all of that for them. So if that's what we're looking for, then we shouldn't, like you said, have a particular idea of what the material well-being is. Rather, the material well-being is yoga kshema vaham yaham. Krishna brings whatever is required for us to continue with our devotional service. That's the material well-being that we're really after as devotees, is Krishna's going to give us whatever we need to be able to stay in Krishna consciousness. So, and because we don't know what that is, then like you said, we shouldn't have a particular configuration of that in mind. But in a general sense, spiritual well-being brings material well-being. If you don't perform sacrifice, then there's not going to be a provision of the necessities of society or on an individual level either. Also, the mental situation will be absorption in materialistic things, which degrades the bodily circumstance, the mental circumstance. also there's valid arguments whether you want to look at it just from a literal way or if you want to look at it from an ultimate way. They're, both of them are valid, that it does bring material well-being for the body. But that doesn't mean that every devotee is not going to have any health problems and then one day they're just going to drop dead after never experiencing any difficulties, because Krishna is performing so many services with this, with our bodies. Those are some thoughts. Anybody else want to add to that or have some other points for the purport?
That you won't be experiencing any distress if one is regulated in his habits of recreation.
Yes, that's also true.
Then one, you know, I forget the Sanskrit. What's the last line?
Yoga bhavati dukkha.
Yoga bhavati dukkha. Then no, there will be no dukkha if he remains regulated. So even devotees follow a regulated lifestyle.
It's that, yeah, that's a nice aspect of it too, regulated lifestyle. Srila Prabhupada actually says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter, that you know the reason why people are short-lived, prayanalpayusha, is that their lives are unregulated, not because of lack of food or like some other more obvious thing like that, but because of unregulated life. Over-dependency upon others, like other factors are mentioned. So having a spiritual, properly performed, as the points made from chapter 6 there in Bhagavad Gita, properly performed spiritual practice does have also those components that come along with it, that the mental and bodily circumstances are better maintained for the purpose of performing the yoga process. Anything else on this part? We could stop really early today because it's the Harinam and whatnot with the in downtown. I don't want to read another verse. So if there's no other thoughts, I guess we'll just stop class. Okay, thank you all very much for the Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Before leaving, I will have to announce stuff about today's goings on. One.